This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 509, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 509. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And Ron Richards.
I've returned.
That's right. You were gone.
Yeah. How quickly you forget.
That's right.
Yeah.
It was like
being the two of us.
Josh and I, it was just like going home again.
Sure it was. Yeah. That's the two jamokes of the status quo now. I see how it is.
Then Douglas MacArthur comes in. I have returned. Come on, man.
And
three of us are corner there. Slight war corner.
Three of us are a fanboy, and we like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book, other books. We'll maybe do some listener mail if you're lucky, if you're good this week, and basically try to have fun. And here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show, so there'll be some spoilers. Exercise some caution. And this week we're kicking off the show with Star Wars Corner.
Yes.
Ron has the pick.
Yeah, so as you know, we've been doing a lot of Star Wars talk, and we have, haven't we? I think so.
I don't know if it's more than normal. It's a normal amount of Star Wars.
But I am willing to go out on a limb and say that Chewbacca, the miniseries written by Jerry Duggan with art by Phil Noto, is possibly the best Star Wars that Marvel's done as of yet.
From what I've read, that seems to be a pretty long limb you're going on.
That is one opinion.
Yeah, well, at least of the character based miniseries. I mean, this is already way better than Lando. And
Ron, it's your opinion. You don't have to justify.
I know.
Other than the fact that
well, he wants us to both be here saying yeah, but we're both like, well, so he's swimming.
All I gotta say is that I love this. This is fantastic. I think that I this is a great little isolated story that is. It lives in the world of Star Wars, but isn't dependent on Jar Jar or any Gungans or any of the bad parts of Star Wars, but also is completely, you know, divorced from the main, you know, kind of the original trilogy or anything like that. It's just a Chewbacca on a planet getting roped in to helping a little girl, and you know, and in doing so, Duggan and Noto are really kind of working really well together. to get across a lot of subtle storytelling with the fact that you have a main character who growls and doesn't speak English. You know, I think that, you know, that was when they announced that they were doing a Chewbacca miniseries. I was like, oh, how are they going to do that? And they've done it really, really well. And we've gotten, you know, they've utilized, you know, the visual storytelling, you know, in terms of, you know, like, so in this issue, basically what has happened is that to set the stage is that there's a planet where there's an evil warlord who has enslaved a bunch of people in mines to make him money. And one of those slaves has a daughter, a teen daughter, who escaped. And when she escaped, she ran into Chewbacca and she begged him to help her. And now Chewbacca is on board to help. And they're figuring out a plan to get her father and the other slaves out. And in doing so, part of the plan calls for Chewbacca to go down a small, you know, kind of a vent, not a vent, but a shaft, you know, like a you know,
like kind a of, trash compactor.
Yeah, like a trash compactor. Yeah. And if you remember in A New Hope, or, you know, in episode 4, Chewie didn't want to go down the trash compactor. Right. And
he smelled something he didn't like.
Yeah, exactly. And in this, as he goes down, we see him kind of go back to a flashback of his time in captivity. And he has memories of being, you know, netted by, you know, by Trandoshan slavers and being pushed into a cell that is too small for him. And he's claustrophobic, and he immediately has that flashback and then crawls back out because he can't do it.
So are we saying that him complaining about the smell was a cover in episode 4?
Or maybe misinterpretation by Han.
That's
well,
what
he
I
was
think. I think,
talking
yeah.
to him, he said, I don't care what you smell, and indicates Chewie
yeah,
said,
but,
I don't like my smell down
but
there.
But I talk to my dog like that all the time.
Exactly, exactly.
I don't know what the dog wants, and I'm just
Han
like, oh, come on, you're fine.
To Chewie.
Han doesn't talk to Chewie. Han doesn't know Wookiee.
Yes, he does. He understands him all the time.
I don't know about that. I think he comes close. He comes within like a 75% success ratio.
How would they be able to have a partnership if they couldn't come
communicate? That's why, well, we could barely communicate for years.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about our relationship problems.
But
well, I think that part of the reason that Chewbacca's always yelling is that he's like, no, I understand you perfect. It's like when you're on the phone and that person's going, can you hear me? And you're going, yes, I can hear you. And they can't hear you. That's what Chewbacca feels like. And yep. He's just like, oh, forget it. Snap. Yep. It's a hydro spanner.
So anyway,
that three-page sequence that you're talking about, though, yeah. It was the standout in the issue for me.
Well, for me, there were two standouts. It was that, and go on, and then I've got another one, but go on about this.
Well, I really like the bit where he looks at the hole, comes back down into the hole, then comes back out of the hole.
Good one.
Thank you. I like that he went down in, and then, like, we get a page. Like, it's a three-page sequence.
Yeah.
And there's no dialogue, really. And then he comes back out, and he just yells at it. Ah! Hole! And then that's sort of what you're talking about, because, like, you have to rely on what is the strength of comic book storytelling is, you know, visual storytelling. But in that three-page, not a lot happens, but also a lot does happen. I really liked it.
Yeah. And then it continues on where it goes back to the girl and they're in the mine shaft and they don't know what's happening. You don't know if Chewie's going to make it. And then you get this great little panel of the bad guys kind of confronting them. And you just see Chewie's head come down through the shaft. And then you get a great single page sequence of the girl reacting and the shadows of Chewie just wrecking, you know, just being the badass that he is. And that was fun. But then the other high point of the issue for me was, so now they're in the mineshaft and they need to get out and there are these droids with blasters or whatever. And Chewie's got his bowcaster, but he realizes that he quickly needs something else. And so he MacGyvers the shit out of a gonk droid. He grabs a gonk droid and a metal pole and some wires and makes a electrical stick that he can short out droids with. And
because if he fires his blasters, all the yeah. stuff that they're mining would explode.
Yeah. So thinking on his feet, you know, ingenuity, Chewbacca is the hero that we need. So there you go.
How much of your love for the – and I'm not denigrating Jerry Duggan at all. How much of it is the Noda art?
Oh, but that's the thing is that, like, I'm a huge Jerry Duggan fan too. And
yeah,
so,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, so the Noda art is a huge aspect of it. But I really think that these guys are collaborating in a like these guys should work together post Chewbacca and other things.
They did. Yeah. What's the name of that series? The Infinite Horizon.
Infinite Horizon.
Yes, you're right. Infinite Horizon. I forgot about that. Yeah.
So they, you know, they have a history together.
Yeah, they had.
That was a creator-owned project before when, like, okay, if Doug and Inoda did that today at Image,
yeah,
they'd sell a bajillion copies. But they did it before that. And so, like, it was one of those labor of loves that took them years and years and years
to
finish.
That was, like, 2007.
Yeah. That was ages ago.
So they did.
But also, Noto has gotten a lot better with his storytelling since then. That's back when he was still mostly really good at pinups.
Yeah.
It was okay, but it was a little stiff. He's much, much better now. He's grown a lot.
This is much more loose. And also, let's not leave out the fact that he did, in fact, put the mustache on the Wookiee.
Yes, he did.
It's a clearly defined Wookiee mustache.
Yep. That is a Wookiee mustache.
Forget that he has a mustache.
Yeah. You're right. But I know, and you know, and the people should be able to, I just want them to appreciate it.
Because it was the 70s when he was created. he's basically the Burt Reynolds of the team. In fact, that's why Burt Reynolds wasn't cast. I don't know if people don't know that or not. Is that because they didn't want two mustaches?
Right.
Yeah.
It would have been weird.
How does this guy drive?
And the you know, it's the Carillion Corvette. It's basically two mustached guys driving a Corvette around space, if you think about it.
Which is pretty badass.
So I like the idea that they're keeping the story that Chewie was a slave, because that was an EU thing. That was a book.
And I think that's a big part of his character. You know, like, I think that's, you know, definitely, you know, like, what makes you understand, you know, kind of what his disdain for the Empire is, and then also he's, you know, like, it bridges the gap between this girl's, you know, kind of situation and why Chewie couldn't just walk away. So I think
life debt.
Yeah, exactly. It works in lots of levels. And also Chewie's, you know, he's loyal and he's a good dude. And yeah. So
this week they also announced they're doing an Obi-Wan and Anakin book. And my question for you guys is, at what point will they be doing more Star Wars books than superhero books?
That's a good question. I posted in our chat room. I think you were out of town, Connor. But when that announcement of Obi-Wan and Anakin came out, I said, "Wow, I can't think of a book I want to read less." Like,
you're going to read it, though.
No, I'm not going to read that.
You'll read episode one.
No, it's Soul. Of course, it's Charles Soul, and it's somebody else that doesn't, you know, like, it's Chiquetto again.
Yeah,
it's the same dude who did the thing with Rucka. Yeah, which is, you know, continuing. We're going to, I believe we'll see, we're continuing. The trend now is artists who excel at photo referencing. Yeah.
Excel is relative there.
Yeah, well, yeah, I know. Right. who focus on photo referencing and yeah, but I don't
believe you're not going to give the first issue a shot. No more than I believe Josh at the time that he was going to not read Darth Vader, and we know from last week that he continues to read Darth Vader. So
yeah.
I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
Don't believe the hype.
I will probably read that first issue.
I will probably read the first issue, but it's going to take a lot.
See?
It's going to take a lot to stick with it, because and Saul's on. He's on. I mean, after Lando, it's on thin ice.
Well, this is a gravy train for these creators. I mean, you're going to see a lot of these guys doing multiple Star Wars books, because now these things see no sign of flagging. And if this movie is at all any good.
Yeah,
these books are going to take off even more.
Well, what's also interesting is what I think is that these are my observations. I do not have privileged information or anything like that. But from my observation, it seems as if a lot of these creators, and you know, specifically pointing to the Star Wars book with, you know, by Jason Aaron and with Cassidy and then Immonen, like they want to. The sense I get is that they want to make stuff that matters, but I wonder how much Lucasfilm is going to let them. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see more stuff like this Chewbacca, which is like a little mini series that is just the tale of. And
they should do it that way. That's the way they should be doing it.
But it's not marking the legend. It's
exactly.
Not making new,
yeah.
New
yeah,
canon.
Exactly. But I think the comic creators. But I think the comic creators want to add to the legend. You know, like look at what Aaron did with you know the Han's wife and all that sort of stuff. I think that's what interests the creators. You know, so it's an interesting balance, I think.
I don't know. I think you have a lot of creators who just want to tell a Star Wars story.
I think I have a lot of creators who just want that royalty check, which I don't blame them either.
That can fund a lot of stories that they want to tell somewhere
exactly.
else.
Exactly, yeah.
Or a boat.
That too. Yeah, you know, that's the way that real people invest their money.
So
I should make more of these money-losing comics.
Or, you know, put it in an IRA. You know, one of those things.
Let's not be ridiculous. What are we living for, man?
So this week, we saw anything more on Chewbacca? I feel like we're back.
I think we're good on Chewbacca. Yeah.
Anyone notes on this issue? Should move on to the next issue. that's weird. Black Magic number one came out from Image Comics. Greg Rucka and Nicola Scott. I was very excited to see this creative team together. Two of my favorite writers, one of my favorite pencilers,
and then there's a history there. in that she was supposed to be doing a Queen and Country arc, mm-hmm. but it never came together. And now it was very unlikely that it would happen. So this is what we get instead of that.
And in the first couple of pages, I was like, oh God, I don't know if I'm able to read this book.
Right, yeah, I had the exact same. I was like, because I was so excited for this because I we love Nicola Scott's work at DC and thought it was great, and we all know how great Rucka is, and we know that they seem like two creators that on paper should go great together. And I opened this up, and I was like, oh.
And I never say stuff like this, but as I was reading it, I thought, man, if I was writing this, I would take all the air out of the scene with something ridiculous, and that's exactly what he did.
Yep.
So it was good, because at first I was like, if this is like super deep magic book, I'm not gonna be able to do it.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a for me it was a like initial starting point, like not what I expected, and then I stuck with it, and then by the end of it I'm like, got it. Okay, cool. And then I'm on board. So
Yeah, it was really good. This is a book about a cop who is also a practicing witch, in like a real witch,
in contemporary times,
Salem's witch. She's just from a long line of witches going back to Salem, and we don't know much other than she has to fix a hostage situation, which she's been requested personally. And the man who's holding the hostages knows she's a witch and tries to burn her like a witch. And one of the great things about this issue was that it's all black and white grayscale. Up until the final moment when there's a giant fire and someone's on fire, spoiler, it's the hostage taker, and it's all colorful and you know, full color. And I thought that was a really great, impactful moment.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, because the art really surprised me, because the art is more kind of a grayscale-y, almost reminds me a lot of J.H. Williams' work.
Mm-hmm.
It was not what I expected. And then it also, it wasn't what I expected. And then maybe about halfway through, I realized, I was like, oh, maybe this is her art and just what DC's been doing to it with the superhero coloring and all that sort of stuff. You know, then I was like, oh, maybe this is a more accurate representation of what she wants to express herself. And then it got to the end with the color burst, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. I see what's going on. So, yeah.
So one of the things that was – I had seen earlier in the day that it came out, Mike Norton, artist, had said, like, tweeted something, and he was just saying, you know, like, in the first six pages of this, it's the best work that Nicola Scott's ever done.
Yeah.
And I had that in my mind when I started, and you get that sort of weird beginning, and I was like, I wouldn't even be able to tell you that this was Nicola Scott.
Yeah.
And as I kept going through with it, I was like, God, he's right. Like, this is great.
Yeah. It's really, yeah.
It's very
beautiful.
Different thing altogether than we've seen her do.
Well, the bones are there, you know, but the structure, the faces, definitely Nicola Scott faces. But you're right; it's almost like it's a full penciled page as opposed to ink.
It's like a digital ink wash kind of thing,
right?
I think, and that grayscale. And
it looks like raw pencils.
And I actually think that it got better as it went through it. All the sort of faces of the people congealed. It was kind of fuzzy at first, I think, on purpose.
Go ahead.
Her faces are, it almost looks like a photo, but like that started off as a cartoon. It's really interesting. Like it almost looks like it's photo reference, and then you look closer and it's like, oh, it's not though. And
no, it's not at all.
I really enjoyed that.
She's one of the best mainstream artists who does acting on people. We've always said that. I've said it at least. You know, you've got your Terry Moores and people like that and Kevin McGuire's, but she's, to me, one of the things that stands her apart is, even though she has a look, she has a definite look to her characters, they've always had distinct faces.
Yeah.
And so this is going to be one of those books. We often joke on the show that we don't remember anybody's names because everybody looks the same. But even though she has a look about her, and her art is unmistakable, her characters always look distinct. There's a scene where they're getting ready to, you know, send her into the hostage situation, and there's a bunch of cops, and they are all different, completely different looking people. They don't just look like a stock male character. And she's always good at showing emotion on them as well. There's a shot where the guy's holding the gun up to her chin, and you can that face there is just haunting them. Her face.
Yeah.
She's really, really, really good at that stuff. She's one of the best artists out there.
So that was that, and she was the story for me on this. It was.
Did you enjoy the story? Because it's not really your kind of thing.
I did. I did enough that I want to stick with it. It's it's Dexie from Stumptown as a witch and a cop. Before, I mean, that's kind of the thing that's happening, but I don't know. There was Bush, so there's that. I went back to look at them, and I was like, oh, look, they're all naked. Look at that.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, there's also Cock and Balls.
Yep, I'm in. I mean, I haven't loved every single thing that Ruck has done lately, but he's a big favorite still, you know. And I, it's always good for me when there's a creator-owned project where the people are excited to work with each other. And these two people have been talking about working with each other for a really long time. And so you have a feeling like this was cemented really well, and so they're going to be energized and excited working on it. And that usually comes through to the page.
Now, Josh, All-Star Section 8, number 5. This is the series that we were really excited for when it started. We were really excited for a couple of issues, and then our excitement level dropped. And I'm going to tell you something that you probably find surprising, is that I really had fun with this issue after the first couple of pages where I wasn't sure. I sort of let myself go with the concept of a sort of blaxploitation version of Phantom Stranger, and I had enjoyed it.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because the next book that is on our list here, I have a very similar experience with, and we're going to get to that in a minute. I see what you are saying, and I just think that it's not. It's one of those things. Like, I think we're too far. Like, they can't support all this, and which is what we talked about before. But I do like the concept of just. Which is, you know, Garth Ennis is thinking, you're going to let me do superheroes, I'm going to do whatever I want with them. And so I like that, but I don't, we're 5 issues in, is it probably going to be 8, 6, whatever?
I assume 6. I think Superman's probably the wrap-up.
Yeah, I've had enough. However, what I have not had enough of, oddly enough, like, the McCray art in this is wonderful. Like, it really is like being back into game, and I'm really enjoying that part of it. I did enjoy this one probably more than some of the other ones once it got past the beginning. I think
this one broke the fourth wall a lot.
Yeah,
I was like, Jen Grunewald is name checked.
Oh really?
There was a whole page where they tried to sell trades.
Yeah, buy the trades.
And I was like, I don't know if that's funny or bad or what, but I'm glad. And then that stupid Superman costume shows up, and I was like, no.
it looks even worse by people who don't normally draw it.
Yep. Yeah.
But I kind of just had to let myself go with it, because I don't know what to make of this. And I didn't really like the last couple of issues, and I was just like, all right, I just want to finish it. And I've always loved the Phantom Stranger, and the fact that he looks like a blaxploitation character.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It makes kind of sense that he would talk like even though there's no precedence.
There was a little bit of me reading it. There was a little bit of me reading it going, is this okay? Because it was very...
Well, that's a lot of Garth Ennis's stuff, which I think I like about it, because he doesn't...
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah.
I also liked seeing the original team.
Well, I was going to say that was actually my favorite part. And those guys, Jean de Baton, that's just funny. It's just funny, and I don't know why.
It's fun to say.
It is. Jean de Baton. Yeah, it was really fun to see those guys again. I like the fact about the little bit about the dog welder. He welds dogs to people.
So he's in hell.
Yeah, of course. Makes sense.
Funny.
I think the Grappla joke is now, I've had enough of it. Although it's possible that the Grappla could go on long enough that it will become funny again. Basically, the character just continues repeating his name. I'm the Grappla. That's the joke. Full stop.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll be happy when it's over.
That original team was great, though. Looking at them, I was like, all right, these ones. The Defenestrator.
You think he ever gets annoyed he's constantly carrying a window around?
That's what he does. That's who he is. That's what he's about. So, in that same sense, Superman 45, which I've been following along the whole time, and this really was the issue that I kind of was like, I don't really care where this is in the context of everything else. It's quite strange, and I think I like it because of that. And also, I think that Howard Porter is a much better fit on this than John Romita was.
Mm.
I really like the Howard Porter art on this. Yeah, there's been stuff that he's done before that felt out of time. Like, you know, it looked maybe more like what he was doing in the 90s. And I thought this looked great. I really...
This is the style he's been using in Justice League 3000.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
It's really good. And I was like, oh, I don't have to look at Superman in that stupid costume. I was just reading this story. And I wasn't thinking about the context of anything else or wherever it was. And it's Superman, the character, but with a whole other set of circumstances, where he's broke, he's got no money, which
I'm trying to decide if And I put the book down and thought about this for a good 2 hours. If
so not
Superman,
long.
I didn't want to spend a lot of time thinking about it.
Sure.
If Superman engaging in a superhero fight club because he needs money was the high point or low point of this New 52 Superman, I can't decide.
And that's what makes it interesting. And that's exactly sort of where I was with that. So because you don't know, so if you're listening at home, basically comes along this superpowered fight club kind of thing, and the idea is that he finds out, he rushes in, he's like, that's not right, and then he finds out that what's actually happening is these are gods who are on the verge of being forgotten, so they're trying to build up the wisdom.
I like
this
that
concept.
Apart. So
this is a concept we've heard.
Yeah, gods from other cultures are fighting in this fight club so that people will remember them and chant their names and, in a sense, worship them so they'll stay alive. I like that a lot.
Yeah. It's a Gaiman-esque concept. And so the end is she makes him an offer, you know, $500 a fight, which, by the way, doesn't seem all that much, but actually probably economically realistic.
He's Superman. He should get some of the gate.
He spent $20 on tacos, though. He was very, very hungry. I like that he's hungry all the time and he doesn't have any money. He's a bum.
He's just a bum.
He agrees to it.
He's a DC hobo and he's taking over Hal Jordan.
So he agrees to it, and but we don't know why, really. Maybe, you know, he's playing another game right now, and I assume that's it.
We're not playing his game.
I think there's some value in Superman being sort of homeless and having to experience life through that lens. That could be a very interesting story.
Yeah, and it's also...
I don't care a bit about this Hodor, whatever bad guy group that's happening. I don't. Every time that part comes up, I just go, I don't want this anymore.
That's so true. I agree with that. But I liked him having. I liked, like, he had to sneak into the place because he couldn't pay the cover. and
he
like
Ron. He is sleeping on a couch away from being Hal Jordan from 10 years ago.
That's awesome.
It kind of is. So if I think of it, I guess like an Elseworld story written by Gene Yang, who's a very unusual choice for Superman, based on his work. And I put all that together and I look at it through the lens. I was able to enjoy this. And I've liked it more. And I think the art change made a big difference.
Yes.
So I don't know.
With you. I love Romita, but I think this actually worked better.
Yeah, I do too.
Especially for the story they're telling. Romita is a big science superhero action storyteller, and this is a very small, intimate story.
Yeah. Right. And I can just, you know, you can almost just see him in his desk going, I got to draw him sneaking into a building. That's what we're doing with Superman. It's Superman. But
sign up for this.
Yeah. So. That will do for those comics, and we'll go to more. But first, you can go to ifanboy.com/support if you like what we're doing. If you want to help support the show and chip in this new internet economy, there's a couple of things you can do there. You can use our Amazon link as we get closer to the holidays, and you're buying stuff for mostly yourself, but probably others. Use that link, and you will contribute directly to the show, and you don't have to do a thing. It won't cost you anything, and that's a big deal for us. So make sure you bookmark that link. And there are other podcasts and websites who want you to use their link. And what I would tell you is that don't.
Screw them.
Just use ours.
Tell them to go screw.
Yeah, go screw. Do those people have War Corner? I don't think so.
Unless you want to use the Goodfellas Minute link, that's fine too.
Yeah.
Well,
that's fine.
They're both going to the same place.
I think it's the same link.
It's the same link. It is.
Jesus, they know. There are also iFanboy memberships where you can contribute directly in the form of cash currency. You can do $3 a month or $30 a year if you want to just sign up for a thing and not think about it. If you think that this is a thing that is worth it in your life, or you can donate any amount that you'd like to just chip in, because that's how we support the things that we love today in a world where so many things are free. And that's all. Thank you.
All right. So moving
welcome,
on.
John.
Moving on,
talking to you.
Oh,
it was interesting. It was a lighter week after a couple of weeks of just relentless releases.
Yeah,
I almost checked the calendar to see if it was a fifth week, but it wasn't. So
I thought the same thing, and I also felt very good. I didn't have to pick.
Yeah. Well, Chewbacca. So, but in those light weeks, you know, it's often a good time to try something new. And with Marvel kind of relaunching this month or whatever they're doing, and even though the event isn't over, we are seeing some new series start. And one of those that I grabbed the first issue of
you
the check
series is
okay. One of those that I wanted to check out, which I hadn't checked out about previously was the first issue of The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. The first issue came out this week, which this Squirrel Girl, along with Howard the Duck and a couple other books, are really taking liberties. Like, I'm kind of surprised they're getting away with what they're doing. Like on the cover, it says only our second number one so far this year, which like
well, that is in the old Marvel style, right? That yeah. sort of fits that whole not Brandeck and
yeah, exactly, stuff. Yeah. But again, you just got to wonder how much rope they're getting, you know? Like yeah, exactly. But so this is written by Ryan North with art by Erica Henderson, and this, you know, every now and then Marvel likes to flirt with doing books like this, which is by like indie or alternative creators, and yes, they're superheroes, but they're more humor than superheroics, and it's, you know, and like this could be a book if you took away the Squirrel Girl character and invented some other, you know, kind of, you know, genre for it, this could be an Oni book or a top shelf book or like some other, you know, like a smaller independent publisher. Just in terms of the art style as well as the sense of humor. So it's nice to see Marvel taking those risks, but I just don't see how this can continue. I just don't see how it survives, you know.
When we saw Squirrel Girl last, it was one of those Avengers books that we didn't like.
Yeah.
And you didn't especially like the way they had her looking. And is it the same design, the giant teeth? And
No. She does have like prominent two front teeth, but they're not like that wasn't that Avengers book. Yeah. Like they
freakish. It's,
yeah, freakish. Yeah, this is more, you know, along those lines. But what's great about this is this I had fun reading it. It was a lot of fun. Every page has very small text at the very bottom of it, underneath the bottom panels, kind of with an ongoing narrative, you know, which we've seen before in comics, but it's always fun, you know, kind of like adding kind of like a commentary to what's going on the page. Mm-hmm. And it was amusing. It was fun. And like a lot of little sight gags, kind of a la Chew, you know, where, you know, at one point they're unpacking in a new apartment and every box has got what's on it and what's inside of it. And in a very, you know, kind of humorous manner, or at the end of it, they end up at a food court, on Avengers Island. And the names of the food shops are like Waffle X Program and Buy Odin's Beer. And, you know, like things like that. So like little sight gags and things like that. So they're fun. I mean, it's definitely a fun, loving kind of title. But again, I just don't see how it exists. I mean, how it continues. You know?
Enjoy it while it lasts.
Exactly. Yeah. So
I was surprised to see you, Ron, put this book on the list to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Well, first off, so we've been enjoying Star Wars. What is it? Star Wars, the Road to the Force Awakened, Shattered, whatever it is. Whatever.
I don't know that we've been enjoying it.
Yeah. Well, we've been enjoying that title.
Road to,
right?
Star Wars, the Force Awakens, Shattered Empire.
Journey to Star Wars, Journey to Star Wars, The Force Awakens, Shattered Empire. Yeah. So
book one.
DC couldn't let that stand. And so now what we got is Justice League, The Dark Side War, Batman number one. And I read this and I just cracked up because it's Batman sitting in a chair for an entire issue.
Remember when that rumor went around he wasn't ever allowed to be shown sitting?
Yes. Yeah.
With issue.
this is the Batmetron thing I've been seeing.
Yes.
At the end of the last issue of Justice League, which is in the middle of the Darkseid War, Darkseid died, and all of the Justice League were imbued with powers of the gods. Batman had already been Metron for a couple of issues, but all of the Justice League now have powers.
Oh, but this is just – but it's hysterical because so Batman is Metron, and it's just him going around Gotham staring at people. Like, that's how I sum it up, basically. It just, like, it is the most ridiculous thing I've ever read.
It's weird, dude.
Right? It's just like...
he goes back to the cave, and Alfred wants to make him food. He's like, I do not require food.
Yeah. And he's like, I can get out of this chair whenever I want. I just don't want to right now. Like, just like, and like, there's a lot of leaning in to talk to people. And it's just like... And also, the chair is enormous, and there's one scene where he's in an apartment, and it's a tiny apartment. It's like, how did he get the chair in? It's like,
excuse me, this is a studio apartment. I don't have the square footage for your giant throne chair.
It's just, like, so weird. So weird. And he uses the chair to go back in time and watch his parents get murdered, and then he goes to find Joe Chill in the prison and, like, just... And just tortures them, but then makes them forget, and it's like why? And Alfred has a hand. I don't know what's going on.
This particular storyline takes place in the past, as you'll know. We're watching Bruce Wayne here, and not Jim Gordon.
I know. Yeah, Gordon's got a mustache. Yeah.
I didn't really like Gordon's portrayal in the first scene. He seems very.
Yeah,
angry.
I know. Yeah. So, but anyway, this is. I mean, just Batman in the Metron chair is just
ridiculous. For
it's
sure.
absolutely ridiculous. So yeah. So.
Yes.
You're just right. Staring at people.
Heavy sigh, yeah.
So we haven't checked in on Chew in a while. They're in the, I think, the run-up to ending the series pretty soon.
I think it's around 60. Think
60, yeah. Yep. So issue 51 was this week, and we don't talk about it a lot anymore, and I'm actually still reading it and still into it, enjoying it, and I just wanted to touch base because I like this. And one of the things I thought that was really fun about it is that this is one of those books, and I like it because it has the voice of both of the creators. All over the page, and you'd mentioned in Squirrel Girl the Easter eggs and just the things going on in the background, and I love how Rob Guillory just puts in a ton of stuff that is him. Like there's this basically the beginning is we go and we're seeing heaven where Tony the female Tony Chu, and is it Antoinette? I forget. She was killed and she's up in heaven, and in this version of heaven, like, there's just a street where they have a pile of mats that you can take a nap on, and there's just people napping in the street. And I know that Rob loves that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And there's a really fun...
It sounds like you're kind of heaven.
That too. Well, that's why Rob and I get along. I was like, oh, right, yeah, he just wants to take a nap there. But we flash forward, and we flash forward 2 years, and we're seeing what sort of what has come along with Olive, Tony Chu's daughter, and after sort of the big aftermath of everything that just happened, and how she ends up in the FDA and why she's more powerful than everybody else. And it's just a lot of fun. And it's like they're covering a ton of ground now because they've done so much explaining of everything. They can just sort of zip through stuff and sort of show what's happening and set up for sort of the big finale. And there's a really great Jaws single page thing at the base joke at the end. So I liked that too.
It's basically at this point they're making the book for you.
Kinda.
Yeah.
Kinda.
Which is fine.
It's fine. I do know that I'm pretty sure that when somebody puts a donut or Jaws in a comic book, there's a good chance that at some point in there thinking, I bet Josh is going to like this. And I like that. I like that that's my place in comics. It's not, listen, I'm not Jack Kirby. That's not going to be that. They're not going to talk about me, but there'll be a little something in there.
I enjoy that you think that you're a consideration in these books.
that's even more amusing.
Not, so. Not all of them.
I enjoy that you think you're a consideration in any of them.
I'm going to follow up on that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to throw a little
point. Think when you were drawing or writing this. I'll ask them both.
We should do it on the final show before we burn it down. I'm going to throw an audible here and talk about the two books together because they're somewhat linked. Batman and Robin Eternal 3, if you recall last week, number 2 was the pick of the week, and it ended with a giant mob of people with hatchets that Josh and I enjoyed quite a bit. This issue, the cover, features a bunch of hatchet people, and then we get the resolution to the hatchet fight, which is fun because they use a lot of kitchen utensils, including Dick Grayson uses a giant wedge of cheese to knock somebody out, which I enjoyed. Nice. But
approved.
So this we talked last week how it's basically becoming a book where all the Batman kids are solving a mystery like the Scooby Gang, which I enjoy. And we had Dick Grayson, Jason Todd, Tim Drake, Cassandra Cain, Harper Row, and Stephanie Brown. And now to this mix, we add Barbara Gordon and the gang from We Are Robin. So there's a lot of sidekicks running around in this book right now, which I enjoy because I was wondering when that was going to happen. And so this was fun. And there's a brief reference here to Batgirl 45, which came out this week, in which... And it's in a scene where Barbara and Dick are talking really briefly. And so that was like a knife twist because I read this book last because previously I read Batgirl 45, in which they fucking kick me in the gut over and over and over and over and over again, in which the cover is Batgirl and Dick Grayson at a wedding, like a photo booth style sort of. And in this issue of Batgirl 45, Barbara's at a wedding. She's a bridesmaid. And she's there with her date, Lucius Fox's son, Luke Fox, who's also Batwing, if you know these things. And Dick shows up to say, hey, guess what? I've always loved you.
Oh.
And she says, go away. I've got a boyfriend.
Oh.
I thought you were dead. That hurt my feelings. I've got a boyfriend. Go away. And I was just like, why do they have to destroy everything I love? Everything I love.
Wow. You all right?
Well, I was all right until the final panel of the book was Dick watching them from a rooftop, watching them dance at the wedding, and look at the look on his face, and it was just like, I don't like any of this.
You can't bring them together, though.
No.
You can't have that.
You can't, but you can't close the door so definitively.
Well, it's comics. It's nothing.
It hurt my feelings, Josh.
The melodrama. Oh, man.
Feelings.
Wow. All right. Well, Connor, while you sit with that,
Wait. You okay?
I'm going to have a drink.
All right.
Yeah, that's fair.
You guys keep talking.
I don't blame you. So similar to the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, I took a flyer and gave a shot on another new series from Marvel, The Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D. number one. And I was delighted to see that it was written by Frank Barbieri of Five Ghost fame, who I think is a great up-and-coming writer, and art by Brent Schoonover, which, Josh, you're a big fan of, right?
Did he just show up last week?
Yeah. He did, and I think that my note on this is that you can see the fact that
Goodfellas story is really seeping into the show. That's twice now.
Yeah,
I'm not complaining. I'm just saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, one thing about the history in the Back to the Future story last week is the production was not great. Like the coloring wasn't very good, and it didn't suit him, and it didn't help him. Whereas with this, it was a much more high level of coloring and production. So I thought it was a much better looking book.
Yeah.
I didn't take a flyer in this because I figured it would involve LMD.
It does. Yeah.
It does. It is very much a part of the story.
Yeah.
I hadn't read the other thing about that. Uh-huh. But it is stupid.
Yeah.
Stupid about it is now they make it. I mean, despite the idea of it and making him and Nick Fury LMDs is horrible. It's a horrible original sin.
Well, now they're running with it.
But that's what I mean. What they're doing now is they're making it all about that. It's like when you have a character come out as gay, and then that's all the character talks about all the time.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, either they're a multifaceted character or they're not. And if they're not, then I'm not interested.
Dealing with it as a new thing.
Right.
So you get every comic he shows up in, Josh.
Yeah, I'm not reading all those. So
But the thing is also is that like they're kind of, like a part of me really likes the approach that Marvel's taking because they're kind of having a fuck it, anything goes.
I agree with you.
You know, but then
part of me,
but then another part of me says like gets annoyed by that because I also know that because of that it's too chaotic. And also, like, I Squirrel Girl, I don't see how this book exists, like, continues. You know, like, so you've got a team of with LMD Dum Dum Duggan with Zombie Jasper Sitwell and Orgo and Man-Thing and Hit-Monkey and Teen Abomination. Like, it's just like they I like the fuck it, try anything, but at the same time it feels like, but we don't care. You know, like
I don't know what the point is.
Right. Yes.
Well,
I don't know what the,
you.
Well, yeah. No, I get that.
You get
but
your
I
dollars.
We've seen this enough times now that, like, it hardly ever catches on. And even if it does, it's not forever. And maybe that's the point. Like, you know, we're gonna sell issues for you're gonna sell six issues worth of this, and then move on to the next thing. And I think that's the point.
Well, yes, that's the point.
It's a weird choice because it's not. It feels like that's a niche thing. That's not like a thing that is going to be super popular, going to make a lot of money. And you know, in the middle of this, I was like, oh, that's Agent Sitwell, who is the zombie.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh,
yeah.
Is that okay? But at the same time, like, I don't know. It's just like, it's like a mashup of like these things that just seems silly. I don't know.
Right.
Like the idea is funny at first, but then you got to run with it.
Right.
Which is
exactly.
Which is the LMD thing. Like, oh, that's kind of cool. And oh, we're gonna do this forever, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that's the thing. Like there's no way this makes 20 issues. You know. And like,
but you know what? I like
okay.
it.
No, I think it has to go 20 issues.
Yeah. No, and I don't think it has to. I think that's true. I like that. You know, it is a Defenders vibe. We're gonna put all these things together. What the hell? Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Or you know, the Superior Foes of Spider-Man was in it. Like it worked. It was enjoyable. It was fun.
Yeah.
So that's the point, I think, which seems to me odd from a sales perspective. But if they want to make comics like that, that's fine.
Yeah, and part of it is whether or not they're you know, because a lot of times some of these stuff, like, they know it's not going to go past a certain point. They're going to put it out there. They're letting the editors and the creators have fun with it, and then they're you know, part of it is seeing these, you know, creators who are established but not established in the Marvel world. You know, that's how they go up the ranks. You know, and so you know, if that's what it's got to do, it's got to do. I mean, it's a you know, interesting, amusing. I'm not a big Hit-Monkey fan, you know, but some people are. But you know, it had the cliche Hit-Monkey panel of him with both guns, which I've seen. And everything, you know, like it just—I don't know. It's
It sounds like to me. It sounds like a book written for the internet.
Yeah, possibly, or some corner that you know of a store and the internet that enjoy this stuff. But yeah, but good for them. I'm glad they're getting work, and I like seeing new ideas. And so we'll see if it takes off. Who knows?
I thought it looked good. It was destroying a bunch of crazy monsters. I was a fan of that.
All right. So those are the books that that we deemed worthy of talking about this week. I'm sure there'll be more next week because they just never stop.
like the mail, Jerry.
Yeah, speaking of the mail, let's go into our mailbox and dip into some of your questions that came in via email. And our first one comes from Eric from Minneapolis, which is, he had a question that we've answered many, many times before, but I thought it's always good to answer again. Yeah. So Eric says, I would love to get some original art to decorate my place, but I have a hard time getting to cons to buy from the artist. What is the best place to buy art otherwise? Do you have places you usually go to get yours or sites you'd recommend? Thanks. And so basically, you know, where can you get original art? And you don't need to go to cons to buy directly from the artists. That helps. And sometimes you get really great prices, but there's a ton of places online with some really great artists that you can get. And the first one that comes to mind is Cadence Comic Art, which is available. They're on the web. What is their address? I'll find out. But Cadence is basically an art dealer. And represents a ton of artists, including Declan Shalvey, Ryan Stegman, Jeff Lemire, a lot of our favorite Tom Fowler, Paul.
That's Paolo.
Paolo. Yeah. Okay. Paolo runs it. Chris Burnham, Becky Cloonan, Gabriel Hardman, Trad Moore, James Stokoe.
The thing about original art is that there's only a couple of dealers, so you can only have to hit up a couple of websites to find most of the art that you're looking
for. Yeah, exactly.
And the problem is, though, so much of it's not being done it's being done on computers now.
Yeah.
There's less and less of original art out there.
Yep.
You know, it's funny, when I was reading that Chew issue, I was like, I want that Jaws page. And I thought, it doesn't exist.
Right. Yeah.
Which is, I was like, no, that's sad.
Yeah.
And I literally don't, I used to read through comics and I'd like keep my eyes out for a page that I like. And more often than not, now it doesn't exist. So.
I've definitely toned down my art collecting big time.
You ran out of warehouse space.
Yeah, exactly. Another great dealer to check out is Essential Sequential, and that's essentialsequential.com, and it represents Sean Murphy, Fiona Staples, Mateo Scalera, Ramon Perez, so folks like that.
Staples work physically? Like,
no, she doesn't.
Paper?
But what's really interesting is what she's done is. So she works all digitally, but what they do is they bang out prints. Mm-hmm. So every cover of Saga is pretty much available as a print. If you like something, you can get it for $25 as a great print. They're doing the Gisle or whatever, that Gicle, Gisle. You know, they did that for the Saga 25 double spread cover. You can get that as like a nice version. So like they're figuring out what's interesting. Artists who work digitally are figuring out ways to make physical art that you can buy via these dealers. So that's kind of cool too. Essential Sequential helps facilitate commissions as well too, which is a big thing too.
I know that the guys who are working with Cadence Art, like, he loves, like, he, that's his job, that's his thing, and all those artists like him and want to work with him. So like that's a good setup. It's very. Yeah.
But if you want even more resources, I would honestly recommend you check out our friends over at 11 O'Clock Comics on their discussion forum, because they actually have a whole section dedicated to original art, and I believe they've got a post that is like, here's all the places to get art from, you know, and like list all these dealers like Splash Page Art and Cadence and Essential Sequential and stuff like that. So there's a lot of great resources over there on their forum, so go check that out.
All right, Dan from Melbourne, Australia writes and says, first off, just want to say I only discovered this show within the last 6 months, and I have been smashing through older episodes to catch up a bit. Love your work. It's filled the void where the show I loved finished, and after a big gap of podcasts, it simply just sucked. You guys are my new go-to comics podcast. You guys know your stuff, and I dig it a lot. Apologies for the long question, but I think it's worth it. On episode 507, you guys reviewed I Hate Fairyland, and Ron said he would give this to his 9-year-old niece. I didn't pick up the book, so I didn't know the rating, but I assume teens, because of the cover, looks somewhat violent. Anyway, my girlfriend has a 9-year-old sister, and for her birthday, I bought her Miss Marvel Volume 1, and her parents said it was inappropriate for her age group, which spun me out because I read it and thought Kamala was a great role model for young girls. This is all one sentence. Do you think I was wrong, or are you her parents going over the top? My girlfriend did mention there were adult themes, but nothing a kid who's reading the Hunger Games novels couldn't figure out. Also, what else would you recommend for a 9-year-old girl just getting into comics, women in comics to look up to, or just some kick-ass stuff kids would love? Oh, some periods in there, man.
Well, Josh is the only parent on the show.
Nine-year-old girl. I only know about children up to the age that my children are. Anything past that, it's like if a 7-year-old talks to me, I'm like, I don't know.
Well, my opinion is that her parents are being too uptight.
Yes.
That's my opinion.
Well, this is I think about this kind of thing a lot because I remember that when I was...
There's nothing parents love hearing more. Someone else tell them they're being uptight.
No. Well, they're not, so it's fine.
Yeah.
They're not going to hear the show. So
like you guys all... Like when we grew up in the 80s, we watched the three channels that were available. And, you know, we would watch stuff that was clearly inappropriate, but we were fine.
I think there's an over-coddling of things going on right now.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, I remember, like, I watched Three's Company incessantly.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
It was on all the time.
Well, do you want to know the problem with Three's Company was that I was told explicitly by my parents, do not watch Three's Company. And Three's Company was on in reruns at 5 p.m. and my parents got home at 6. Mm-hmm. And so what did I do?
You watch your
Of course, yeah, because I was told not to. It was taboo, you know.
But not just Three's Company. I mean, I watched.
Right, that's the best example.
Hill Street Blues.
Yeah.
Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah.
Dallas. I mean, these are all, and I was a little kid.
Yeah. You know what G.I. Joe comics were like.
I watched Falcon Crest.
Yeah, I mean,
they sold us G.I. Joe comics that were based on a man trying to work through his Vietnam issues. I mean, that's what we did.
It's true. It's true. Yeah.
Now, I didn't read all of Ms. Marvel, but it seemed pretty.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's really tame.
I mean,
really tame. But
that said, there's stuff that I believe that there's stuff for a 9-year-old girl that might not trigger these parents to freak out. And the first thing that comes to mind is the Raina Telgemeier's work. Raina Telgemeier. Smile is the one that jumps out at me. It's a graphic novel, perfect for a 9-year-old girl.
Unless she's looking for badass like action.
But I was gonna say then I would recommend Lumberjanes too. You know, Lumberjanes is not superhero-y, but there's a lot of action and there's a lot of fun and it's very relatable and it's, you know, it's been a hit with kids that age. So yeah, I mean those are my recommendations. So.
It's tough because my wife just told me as I was coming down here, she's like, Oliver's starting to take your comics off the shelf and look at them.
Uh oh.
Because he's interested in them, and I just went, there are no appropriate comics there.
What did you think of Sin City?
Yeah,
that's exactly. Like,
even this is shadow work on her nipples.
Listen, I could see a kid your son's age reaching for Lost Girls because the art was very, you know.
Well, if he reached for it, he would grab it. It would fall on him and knock him out.
Yeah, it's a tough one. You actually, Ron, you actually have spent more time around 9-year-old girls than I have. Your nieces. You have your nieces, and like, so you would understand more. Like, my kid really liked Tiny Titans. Yeah. Actually, a lot of that was over his head.
Well, that,
for a 9-year-old, that's going to be a little...
Yeah, Tiny Titans is a little kiddie, I think. But my niece, who is now 12, Jesus Christ, throughout her elementary school years, she loved Tiny Titans. Like going from like first grade up, she was all about Tiny Titans. But a couple of years ago, I gave her Lumberjanes, and that's the one she's all about now. And I also got her Raina Telgemeier, Smile, and the other books that came after it.
Titans is good because it's in the best Looney Tunes tradition. There's jokes that are go over a kid's head, but there's a lot of jokes that are squarely for the kids.
Yeah. I know a book that we've been reading a lot lately. From Oni called Sketch Monsters, written by Josh Williamson, who does a lot of great comics with Image, and he's doing Marvel now too, I think. It's about a little girl who like represses her feelings and she draws them into a sketchbook, and all the monsters in the sketchbook come alive until she lets her feelings out, and then they go back into the sketchbook.
Yeah.
It's totally appropriate and fine and good.
I want to recommend a book I read on the plane just yesterday. We talked about it in the show, but I had finally read all the issues. It was a Giant Size Little Marvel AVX, which was a Battle World book, actually, but it was written and drawn by Scotty Young. It was all about the Avengers and X-Men as kids fighting each other over the attentions of the two new kids in town. And it was like, it was a perfect Scotty Young all-ages book that wasn't as violent or adult as I Hate Fairyland.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that one. If they didn't like Ms. Marvel, I don't think you should give her
a it's a bunch of... Oh, I Hate Fairyland for sure. No. That one's way more adult than Ms. Marvel is.
As much as I cringe to recommend it, Bee and Puppycat from Boom probably is pretty good. Very in the Sailor Moon, Powerpuff Girls kind of vein.
Why do you hate to recommend it?
Well, it's just because it's so bubblegum and it's not my... Like, I don't like it, but I think a 9-year-old girl might.
You
like
mean
it.
A 38-year-old man isn't have the same taste as a 9-year-old girl?
It's shocking.
And and can recognize that maybe the other thing isn't horrible because of that. You're growing, my friend.
I'm trying. Yeah. So.
Yeah, check out all those. I think Sketch Watches is probably a really good one.
Yeah.
But it sounds like the parents of that person have their own level of what's appropriate, so keep that in mind.
Right. All right, Josh, why don't you take us home with the last email?
Jason from Pittsburgh. In regards to the Star Wars fatigue and media blackout. Appropriate. Yeah, we're going to end the show with Star Wars. There it is. You guys seem to know a lot about different forms of media, and this is something I thought about for a long time, at least 3 hours. Well, let's not call that long.
Yeah. It's like you're starting your thesis.
That's the lead up. Yeah, that's really just the opening paragraph there,
pre-prep,
buddy. Pre-pro, yeah.
I have been led to believe that we should just stop this until he comes back and has a good 16 hours into it.
Yes.
I have been led to believe that the marketing campaign for a movie can have almost the same budget as the movie itself. True.
Correct.
At this point, for the new Star Wars, there have been 2 teasers, 1 full trailer, comic books, prose books, toys, product tie-ins, costumes, record-breaking IMAX and opening night ticket sales, and on and on. What is the point of spending so much on marketing? The same could be said of Avengers, Hunger Games, etc., of these known franchises. Is there anyone out there who could be interested in The Force Awakens that simply doesn't know about it? It is impressive that with all this stuff, they really still haven't revealed much about the actual story. Do we have on this show a marketing professional?
Yes, but before Ron jumps in, I want to throw my 2 cents in, because Ron is a marketing professional. I will defer to him on this. But I have 3 points. First, if you recall, Ron, you and I and Viscardi argued about whether or not they would reveal too much about Star Wars, and I told you I didn't think so.
Yep.
And you guys disagreed with me.
Yep.
And you thought it would get the Avengers Ultron treatment, and it didn't.
Yep. So, hey, we're not there yet. We still got 2 months to go. But yes, so as of this point, yes, you were correct. They are erring on the side of caution, and which I'm glad to see. I'm glad I was wrong about that.
So my two responses to this, and then I'll let you run with this, Ron, is that number one, and this is actually true, that a lot of very expensive marketing executives have to justify their jobs.
I was gonna say, at least 60% of those marketing budgets are ego and self preservation.
And number two, it's not about just the movie grosses. They make as much, if not more, money from the toy tie-ins and all the stuff that's considered marketing. That's Disney's bread and butter.
Yeah,
they make way more money in the toys, product tie-ins, prose books, comic books, costumes, all that stuff is what actually, it's where the real money for the movie's made, as Yogurt once told us.
I was gonna say the same thing. I mean, yeah, kind of, you nailed it.
The zeitgeist of the industry, and then all those kids go, "I want that stuff."
Don't mistake. The books and the toys and the costumes and all that sort of stuff have marketing elements to them, but it's mainly licensing and as a profit center and that sort of thing.
Ancillary sales.
Yeah, exactly. I want to go back and focus on the concept of someone who's interested in The Force Awakens that doesn't know about it.
Right.
I really want to find that person. I want to find them. Like, what is this Star Wars thing I keep hearing about? Like,
if we buy one more round of banner ads, we're going to get that final undecided voter.
I mean, but the thing is that, like, there's a weird thing that happens in marketing, especially in entertainment and media and stuff like that, where, you know, there's an old adage that you've got to spend money and make money, right? And what's fascinating is to see is this idea is like, well, you know, we need to spend $100 million to promote this movie that everyone knows about that is in the cultural zeitgeist. And it becomes kind of this chicken and the egg kind of thing where it's like, you know, if they spent $0 and did nothing, would it have the same results? Some would say yes, some would say no.
The marketing, the VP of marketing who okays that strategy and the movie bombs is now fired on Monday.
Yep,
easier to spend that budget that they expect you to spend and keep your job,
because
then you can blame it on the film and not the marketing.
Yep.
And then say, you know what, we don't need to market Star Wars, I'm just not going to do it. Yep. And then it only makes $200 million opening weekend, and the marketing executive is fired. That's why those things happen.
That's the reality.
The other part of it is that every Monday at their morning stand-up or whatever, the marketing folks have to go in and be like, okay, here's what we did, and they have to name stuff. You know, they got to do things. So there's this team of people constantly making deals and getting mentions and pushing things out there, and like it's the job.
Yep.
And there's more people doing that now than there's ever been.
In fact, they're more powerful now than they've ever been. The CMO is becoming the most powerful C-level person in most companies now.
Yeah.
because it's all about marketing. So there you go. That was exciting.
It's fascinating.
That's more corporate business structure talk of this show.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting how it affects
kids. That's what kids tune in for, Josh. It's what they tune in for. Let's discuss how the C-suite operates.
Well, we
on the C-suite. Listen to you.
Listen to Connor.
Wow.
You used to be the guy who hated talking like that. And look at you now. You know the words? CMO.
If you're ever bored, go look up marketing failures. It's fascinating to see what was attempted by some folks. And
there's no like real, like, did it work? Did it not work? Yeah. Like, there's no way to really prove it. Yep. There's no metrics to drive that.
Yeah.
All right. So you can contact us. You can contact us at email at ifanboy.com. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. That's how you get on the show. Join the discussion. If you want us to talk about more C-level stuff, we will do it. Just send the emails in to contact@ifanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOY 326-2697. We've been getting a lot more emails since you came back, Ron.
Which is great. Yeah.
I don't know what that means. But
they really stopped writing to me and Connor. Like, we heard what you have to say.
Yeah. So if you do send us an email or you call our voicemail line, tell us who you are and where you're from. And if you call the voicemail line, keep it around 30 seconds. We like to know where people are from. We like to know where we're penetrating.
We'd like to know if you've emailed Ben.
So also, we've mentioned a couple times in the show, we have another podcast called Goodfellas Minute that comes out every Monday through Friday, in which we, the three of us and sometimes a special guest, discuss the Martin Scorsese film Goodfellas 1 minute at a time.
Are you guys still doing that? Why didn't...
Yeah, so that's going to go on through next April?
It's
April, so that's every Monday through Friday. If you want to hear us talk about Goodfellas, we're about 15 or 20 minutes, and it's fun. There's a lot of comedy and laughs to be had. You can find all that at goodfellasminute.com.
And we got a special guest coming up this week, actually, right?
This week we have special guest Jeff Cannata, who's been on the show many times and is a big Goodfellas fan and brings an interesting perspective because he is an actor. So there's a lot of interesting discussion there about what actors
are doing.
He's also an Italian, so he and Ron discussed a lot. It's actually it doubles the Italian quotient, which is a lot of Italians.
I
think the law says you can't have that many Italians congregating in one spot.
Probably
means there's a criminal conspiracy happening. so if you like borderline racist discussion, also have a
finally an ethnic group that we can really go after publicly.
Hey.
Head over to goodfellasminute.com.
You're my Italian friend. I can say it. It's fine. I got a picture with you and me next to each other. Hey.
All right. So you can go over to ifanboy.com if you like the show and you want to talk about this week's books with other folks who like the show as well as find all of our previous podcasts and things like that. And of course, if you're on the social medias, you can follow us at ifanboy on Facebook and on Twitter. And you can follow us all individually. I don't know why you'd want to because it's just a bunch of nonsense. You can follow us. You can follow Josh at J.A. Flanagan. Connor at SCS Kilpatrick, and I'm at Ron XO.
And we talked about supporting the show earlier, but one of the other things you can do is to write a review on iTunes or share links about it, or this is us doing marketing. Let people know if you like the show or you think somebody else might like the show. Spread the word. Make it go around on the social media or, God forbid, in the real world. Put it on a thumb drive. Put it in a bottle.
An airplane. Oh, that's a good idea.
We haven't done that in a while. I think we covered the bottle.
You should also tether that bottle to another bottle that's got like a device in it, so they can actually.
They're gonna be
like,
pretty cool.
If somebody on like a deserted island in the South Pacific gets the thumb drive, that's not gonna help them. But they need another bottle that follows them with a computer, and then a following bottle that has some sort of power supply generator situation.
There's a lot of title issues that could come up there and make that an incomplete transaction.
You got to make sure the paper trail is correct.
Put a note in there, bottle 1 of 7. And then how many they're waiting for.
This sounds like I'm missing 3. God damn it.
Damn it. I just get the bottle with the cables in it.
This is poor marketing. You can see how you can easily, the budget can just explode.
Right. You need 7 bottles for each person.
Yeah.
So 14, just in case you lose one.
I believe that's all for this show.
That is it.
I think we've completed this.
Thanks for listening this week. Tune in next week for our 10th anniversary episode.
Oh, God, is it next week?
Next week's our 10th anniversary.
Get something now to wear.
The weekend of that is our 10th anniversary. So this was our 10th anniversary year, and next week is officially our 10th anniversary episode. So tune in next week for that. Until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I'm Josh.